City in a West. Thank you for that. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome everyone to the Inner West Council Local Planning Panel. The panel this afternoon has a number of items before it, and I welcome you all to that process. I request of you to be polite, respectful of others, and if others are speaking, please don't interrupt them. I'll introduce you to the panel in a moment, but I should firstly acknowledge that the council acknowledges the Wadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, and those current, past, and future elders who've occupied this land. Ladies and gentlemen, I will now introduce you to each of the panel, and as I am currently speaking, perhaps I'll start. My name's Gary Shields. I'm the chair of today's panel meeting. My background is many years as a consultant, a number of years as a local government planner. I've got master's degrees in planning, engineering, and urban design. And I also have a PhD in planning. Also served on the Land Environment Court as a commissioner. And I serve on a number of other panels. Can I invite Jan to introduce herself?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Jan Morrell, I've been a town planner for some 40 years in both state and private enterprise and local government, the director of planning at Liverpool City Council. My last position, full-time position, was as Commissioner of Land and Environment Court for 14 years, and since that time I only serve on independent panels. Thank you. No conflict of interest.
I should add, I have no conflicts of interest. Thanks, Jan. Lisa.
Microphone.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Truman. I'm a background and qualifications in architecture and a background also in town planning. I've worked in local government for 15 years and now in private industry as a heritage specialist. I sit on the State Heritage Register Committee and also a number of other planning panels.
Thanks, Lisa. Alan Barnes.
Yes, I'm also a local resident. I hold a master's in Aboriginal studies, not that that's very relevant. My background is engineering insurance for many, many years, which includes construction insurance. So my engineering mind, hopefully will do some good here.
Thank you, Alan. Without any further ado, I'm going to move to our agenda items that we have before us today. And I can report that item one on the agenda has been dealt with previously and I think satisfactorily resolved prior to the commencement of this meeting. So on that basis, might I move to item two, which is 467 to 469 Liverpool Road, Croydon. And I'm wondering if our person who was seeking to address us on that item is with us today.
Yes, I am. My name's Tim Page.
Tim Page, thank you. Would you just introduce yourself to the panel, say your residential address, whether you're speaking for or against, and thank you. And would you also limit your presentation to 3 minutes, please?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, sir.
Well, my name's Tim Page. I am the owner and occupier of Unit 2, 467 to 469, Liverpool Road, Croydon. I am for the development. My wife and I are looking to enclose our balcony. We are facing Liverpool Road, which is a major road corridor in Sydney. As such, it attracts a lot of noise, a lot of pollution, and it is, to put it simply, it's quite unusable. Council have refused the DA on the basis of a number of items, specifically being impacts on the streetscape, bulk and scale, and loss of amenity. I'd just like to address those points. Firstly, the streetscape. Our building is about 9.5 metres back from the road. If you're looking at the apartment from the street, it's barely noticeable. There's trees covering it. The architectural drawings that have been supplied by myself to the panel and sort of indicates that it's kind of a seamless look. I believe it's a seamless look enclosing the balcony. The windows that were proposed are going to match the existing windows in the apartment block. And it's going to be barely noticeable from the streetscape. The scale and loss of amenity, council has cited that private open space is going to be lost. I would argue that there is no open space for me to actually use anyway. As I said, all we can do with the balcony is put our laundry out there. I don't even let my two-year-old girl or son go out there and play. It's just you can't use it. And so enclosing the balcony for us would mean that we can use the space and we can cut down the noise and pollution that we're currently getting. I guess a point of frustration for me has been that there are other developments in the Inner West Council that have been approved or that currently have balcony enclosures. One such development is on the corner of Frederick Street and Liverpool Road and Frederick Street. Two massive developments where every single balcony has been enclosed, and that's only 100 metres away from me. We are a 10-unit apartment building, has approved the development that has been supplied to council with the AGM minutes of that approval, and yet council have still refused the development. On a personal level, Sydney property prices have skyrocketed. My wife and I would love to continue living in the inner west. It is way too expensive. So if we were to outgrow, if we were to have another child, there's just not a lot of space. We would have to pack our things and move. And I feel council have a responsibility to try and accommodate families, and I feel such an inexpensive way and a viable option is to allow residents to enclose balconies. Just quickly, council have cited that we can't borrow natural light borrow.
Could you wind up there, Mr. Page? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Council have cited that natural light and air movement cannot be borrowed from other rooms. The NCC actually cites otherwise, that you can borrow natural light and air movement for other rooms. We've got a couple of other points. There's been no community feedback opposing the development. There's a few other points, but in the interest of time, I think I'll have to wind up there.
Thank you, Mr. Page. Just a couple of questions I have, and then I'll hand you over to the panel to see if they have any questions. How many bedrooms is your unit now?
It's three.
It's a three-bedroom.
It's a three-bedroom place. It was initially a two-bedroom place. The owners before me actually created an extra bedroom by cutting down the living room, the dining room space. So the third bedroom is it's a shoebox. It's literally a nursery, and that's all it can be. It's that small, but it's technically a three-bedroom apartment.
Right. Okay. Thanks so much. Panel, do you have any questions of Mr. Page?
I just have one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You
referred to, Tim, some other enclosures that have occurred. Was this after the developments had been completed and then later on they were enclosed? Or was it during the process of building or before they were occupied?
So the two dwellings on Liverpool Road and Frederick Street, they have been developed as such with enclosed balconies.
Right.
And then there's one other development which is on Thomas Street in Croydon, just off Frederick Street, which was developed as a balcony and then subsequently enclosed later on.
And is that just one within a unit block?
Yes. I'm only looking at from the streetscape, but the bottom apartment is enclosed. The top apartment is open as per the original development.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have any questions? All right. Thank you. Mr. Page, the committee, or at least the panel, will review your submission in detail in light of the council's recommendation and make a determination a little bit later in the meeting. So thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you. Do you want me to stay on?
No, you can sign off now. There won't be a decision handed down to you tonight, but it will be available on the website tomorrow or the day after.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks everyone for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Page. Item 3, 183 Liverpool Road, Ashfield. And we don't have any presenters on item 3. Does the panel have any comments, questions, or suggestions as to how we might proceed with this item at this stage?
I think we just defer it to our private session for determination.
Okay. Thanks, Jen. Anyone else, Lisa or Alan? All right. Thank you. Item 4, which is 33 Wellesley Street, Summerhill. We have a recommendation for approval on this one. And I haven't got any speakers listed at this stage. Are there any, Jay, is there any late speakers that have registered to you?
No, I'm not aware of any.
Okay, thank you.
I did see Mr. Hebden there, but perhaps you're observing.
Hi, look, I am observing. I suppose if there are any questions or issues, I'm happy to answer them. But basically, we've seen Council's recommendation. Don't need problems with it. Hopefully, the panel doesn't either. So I'm happy just to wait in the wings. And if you have any questions, fire away. Otherwise, we'll just see what happens.
A wise man once said to me, never miss the opportunity to say nothing. And now might be one of those times for you. So thank you for your comments, and we'll make the deliberations on that a little bit later. Thank you. Item 5. We do have some representatives on this little number, and this is 356 Canterbury Road. I'm just wondering if some of the submitters are here with us now. I've got an Alka Sabni is presenting first. Is she with us or he with us today?
Hi, I'm from ArtMed Architects. I'm just here to answer the questions, if there are any.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
What about Jim Morris?
Yes, I'm here.
To present or just to answer questions?
To present.
Mr. Morris, would you please present your case, comments and submission to the panel. And if you could restrict your time to 3 minutes, we'd be much appreciative.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now, to my mind, the logistics challenge hasn't properly been acknowledged. I see the council approves of it. But with Canterbury Road congestion and 94 children and cars, I see problems, and I'd like to mention a few. Cars queuing down the driveway for the 12 spots should be required to turn off their motors for a start. I haven't seen anything about that. The AM drop-offs, there'd be heartbreak moments for children and parents, children 0 to 5 years at the point of entering the unknown plus imminent abandonment. Parents would need to take children to the play places to reassure them. And morning peak hour, but this hasn't been addressed. Morning peak hour queues across 354 driveway and along Watkin Street are repeatedly overlooked, but they will disrupt. Staff will have to, or would have to, be on the footpath to walk children through the street entrances at times. PM collections, no mention of organising children in readiness for collection. Why would parents of preschoolers be any different to parents of school-aged children who jockey for convenient parking spots outside schools by arriving long before pick-up time? Would parents park in Watkin Street for time to chat with staff and locate their children? There would be sovereign people among parents. Now, there should be a do not queue across intersection across Canterbury Road at Watkin Street for condition of approval. That's not stated, but it should be. Vehicles accelerate from Canterbury Road to avoid collisions and get away from the nightmare. There's a big danger to the unwary, even 50 metres down the road where I live. Page 50 of the Council's Development Control Plan 2016 requires non-residential development to incorporate passive solar design, solar hot water system, capture and storage of rainwater on roofs, green roofs and walls. The current application has no solar panels. What look like solar panels on page 11 of the application, DA, are pergolas. No solar hot water system, no capture and storage of rainwater on roofs, no green walls, no indication of green roofs. I really think you should take the environment protection seriously. The 82 children, there's a lot of kids. Amphitheatre would cause 80 children's tight local cords to resonate along Watkin and Mount Streets, way beyond those background noise monitoring spots set up at the nearest neighbouring addresses. Voices would impinge on two-storey houses on both sides of Mount Street, 2.5-metre barriers angled at the top on levels, angled at the top on levels 1 and 2 would be needed, not 1.5-metre barriers. And believe me, I don't know if you did your inspection in Mount Street, but honestly, Mount Street does overlook that. We do have this hill, and it is quite close to Mount Street residences when you actually stand there. But basically, that's what I have to say. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. Any questions of Mr. Morris?
Mr. Morris, you reside in Watkins Street, do you?
Yes, that's right.
Right. Thank you. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Any other topics or otherwise that the panel has to raise with this particular matter?
We do have the architect available, I believe.
The architect said he's available for questions. Yeah. Would anyone have any questions of the architect?
Well, it's more, I suppose, a matter for the applicant. But I do notice that the operating hours are 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. And I was just wondering whether such an early start is required.
It's been proposed to have an early start to allow the team to get ready for the classrooms, do the admin side of the things. We don't anticipate the daycare or the childcare centre and the kids to be in the centre from 6:30 as such, but it's just to allow the staff to get in and
allow the staff to set up. But
yep,
say 7 or 7:30 be appropriate for the children to arrive.
I think it's the preference of my client to start at 6:30 and get a bit more prepared. But if this is something with the council would like to...
No, I don't know whether you heard my question. I can understand how you may want to set up a little bit earlier with staff, but is there a need for it to be open for the children from 6:30? And wouldn't 7 o'clock start or 7:30 start be more appropriate?
I'll have to consult the client for the operating hours, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to get back to us fairly quickly, that's all.
Just give me one.
So you can do that immediately. Thank you.
Just off the phone from the operators, we're catering to the kids and the children of the emergency staff, where they would want the kids to be in the childcare centre at 7 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah. So right. 6 a.m. is just for the staff to prepare for 30 minutes and then 7 a.m. start for the kids.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
There is also a condition recommended in terms of the outdoor hours. And the outdoor hours are recommended between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m.
That's correct.
Yeah. And I suppose one thing that went through my mind was having children dropped off at 6:30, which does seem a little bit early as opposed to 7 a.m., which is more of a standard time. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Chair. Any other comments from the panel? If not, thank you. And... can we move on to item 6? Thank you. And item 6, we've got a modicum of interest as well. And we've got a few submitters.
Sorry, can I interrupt? Am I allowed to comment on item 5? Sorry, I had my hand raised and I just wasn't sure if I was able to make it to... address a comment to the architect for item 5.
Sorry, who are you, sir? Could you identify yourself?
My name is Dennis McNevin. I live on Canterbury Road opposite the proposed development.
Are you an objector?
Yes, I am.
Normally you need to register to submit your arguments, but I will hear your comments if you're very brief.
Okay, thank you. So, yes, I just had two questions for the architect, if that was okay. The first one is the building...
No, sorry, the questions are to the... You can give to the panel, but it's not a Q&A to the architect, I'm afraid.
Okay, sorry. My questions to the panel then are the 13-metre height to which the building is restricted, is that going to cast a shadow over my residence, which is directly opposite and south of the development? And my second question is, I note in the development application that the site's not identified as containing a heritage item and not located within a heritage conservation area. Does that mean that there is no requirement for any heritage assessment for the existing buildings?
Jay, can you or one of your team answer that or those questions?
So the first part in terms of solar access, certainly there will be some shadows cast by the new development, but most of those shadows are going to fall on the road or on the roads. And in terms of compliance with our controls of solar access, yes, the development does comply.
Thank you.
Sorry, what was the second part of the question?
The requirement for any heritage assessment on the buildings that which are proposed to be demolished to make way for the new development.
I don't think the buildings are identified as contributory buildings, and I don't think they're in a conservation area. I'll just pause for a moment and just.
Sorry, what was the name of the gentleman asking the question?
My name is Dennis McNevin.
Thanks, Dennis.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I just confirm there's no restrictions on those buildings in terms of heritage.
All right. Thanks. Thanks so much, Jay. I'm moving on then. That item will be determined subsequently by the panel, and the results will be published on the website. Thank you for your submissions. Item 6, 115 Short Street, Birchgrove. A few interested parties on this little number. And I'm just wondering, do they wish to submit on this one, or are they here to... the recommendation is for refusal. So the two people I have listed is firstly Mr. Robert Clark. Mr. Clark, I think you're an adjoining owner, are you not? Mr. Clark, are you there? No?
Hang on. Can you hear me now?
I can now. Thank you, sir.
Sorry, apologise for that. We were muted.
No, that's all right.
Yes.
I have that trouble all the time myself.
I understand. Averse to the wise man's statement you mentioned earlier, I have about 3 minutes and 10 seconds of a prepared statement that I'd like to offer the panel, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Jeff, you certainly can have the 3 minutes anyway.
Okay. Look, my name is, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to address this panel. My name is Robert Clark, and I have prepared both submissions to the Council in regard to this and the formally refused application. I'm also speaking for Ilka Stashen. We are the occupant owners at the terraces at 111 and 113 Short Street, immediately affected by the proposal at 115 Short Street. Of our major concerns with the proposal before the panel today, put simply, is that the proposal fails to address the only window we have in our northeast facing wall that currently allows direct sunlight to our main living room and the whole middle section of two stories of our three-story terrace house. It would render that whole section in darkness. The proposal will block it entirely, and the applicant's own shadow diagrams amply demonstrate this at all periods of the year and times of day. Further, this window is very carefully detailed on the exceptionally detailed level and detail survey prepared by the applicant's surveyors. It was not shown on the documentation submitted to Council and was not referred to in the SEE. And further, was not even mentioned in the computer-generated shadow diagrams. It was ignored. Council has addressed this issue in its development assessment report. We thank Council for its detailed analysis of this issue and support it. We are also concerned with the impact on our rear yards from the proposal. They face south. The overshadowed space is significant and severely reduces our amenity. Council also addresses this in detail and in their assessment report and references a previous Land and Environment Court decision. Of further import, and given the nature of the inundation we have had recently, we are extremely concerned that the stormwater disposal scheme proposed would create significant impacts on our properties and prove inadequate. The proposal includes a significant excavation of a sandstone shelf adjacent to Short Street and could potentially create a dam effect that would create diversions that would affect our very old properties. I note that having constructed footings myself to suitable rock on our site, we found free-flowing water at levels some 3 metres plus below the lower level of these properties. And these were documented by our engineers, and we had to take steps to deal with these. There are significant water flows at these substratum levels that run through the rock shelves on around Short Street. This weather will simply amplify these flows considerably. These sandstone rock shelves are fed by land further up the hill towards Roundtree Street, where owners do not have stormwater easements through lower properties for the disposal to the street system. The house immediately across the road has a pump out system. The engineers did not do any geotechnical testing on this site and are probably unaware of the local geomorphology, even though this application is a significant structure with significant excavations proposed. This is the final. We recommend and support the development assessment report prepared by Council and its conclusions to the panel. If the panel is minded to grant any type of conditional consent, we request that, among other matters suggested by Council, our window and access to direct sunlight to our interior and private open space is addressed in any future application or amendment, and that critical stormwater issues are not concluded behind a construction certificate without appropriate and necessary geotechnical investigations being provided to council for assessment. And I'd refer Alan Barnes to that, because these matters with water egress and so forth and stormwater could become serious issues in the future, because there's no knowledge of the substratum of this site at present from geotechnical investigation. Thank you very much for your attention to this matter, and thank you for hearing us. That's Robert and Ilka. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you're speaking on behalf of the other registered name as well?
No, not the other registered neighbours. We're only speaking on behalf
of the registered name at who's also cohabitating at 113.
No, yes, that
short street. Ilka.
Ilka. Ilka.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I gathered that. Thank you. But my point was simply that you won't need to present.
No.
That's right. I won't need.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your views will be taken into account together with the recommendation, and we'll make a determination a little bit later. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Moving on to the next item that I have, and it's item 7, and it's 141 Bedford Street, Newtown. And we have two people registered to present. And I've got Barbara Greaves. Barbara Greaves, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
And I've got Habitat Planning.
Yes,
yes, I do. Is someone from Habitat Planning there?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Chair.
And Barbara Greaves, are you an objector in this matter?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
And you reside at 139 Bedford Street, Newtown. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Would you like to present your case to the panel? Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to address the panel today. I greatly appreciate it. I don't want to take up any more of your time. We have previously lodged a written objection to this development application, which is largely consistent with the assessor's report. I'm just here on behalf of my husband and myself to respectfully reiterate our view that the VA represents a significant overdevelopment of the site, which will have permanent impacts on our lives, the amenity and enjoyment of our home and the local neighbourhood area. I support all of the comments made by the assessor in his report and thank Council for its considered and detailed approach to this matter. Because of this, I don't think it's particularly helpful to add anything further, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions of Ms. Greaves? No? No? Thank you. Then Habitat Planning. What would you like to say to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Johnson. I am a senior town planner here at Habitat Planning, and with me is Sam Asaki, who wrote the original application.
Do you think you could come a little bit closer to the microphone? Getting a lot of echo in you.
Okay, no, that's it. Is that a bit better?
That's a bit better, thank you.
Okay, that's good. So, as I was saying, we're representing the owners, Craig Kendall and Melissa Golly. Again, similar to Barbara, I won't go back over a lot of the information you already have in the agenda, just mainly addressing the items that council have raised in their agenda. Obviously, we're in support of the application, which is currently recommended for refusal. The first point I'd just like to talk about is the floor space ratio calculation the council has used. So the original assessment had it as 44% over. The latest report had it at 37%. We've calculated it's only at 12.9%. When you look at the definition of floor space ratio, it appears council's included things like the balcony, vertical circulation spaces. So we believe that the report probably over-represents the level of non-compliance, whereas we've only got it at 12.9%, which equates to an actual total floor area of only 13.94 square metres. And when we're dealing with a site that's only 98.1 square metres, it's difficult to achieve the floor space ratio given that the site is already below the minimum lot size stipulated by council. One of the next points the council was quite particular about was the streetscape appearance of the extensions. We've purposefully designed the building to retain the period facade of the building. We've retained it below the parapet level, so it actually wouldn't be visible from Bedford Street. The only location where you'll actually see the extension will be at the rear in the laneway. And for these reasons, we believe it will minimise the impact in terms of, although not in a heritage conservation area or a heritage item, we've treated it in terms of looking at the borough charter to try and minimise some of those impacts. Essentially, what the owners are trying to do is just make the rationalise the building, which at the moment is quite pokey in terms of the bedrooms and the internal layout. They're not intensifying this at all. It's currently a four-bedroom house and they're retaining that as a four-bedroom house. They're just making it a more usable internal layout. Several of the other items the council raised was car parking and open space. So the original application didn't include a car park, just given it's directly opposite the railway station and none of the other neighbours contain any car parking. But at council's request, we then included one in the latest plans. So we had some permeable parking that could be former dual use. So it could either be open space or car parking. So again, we're happy to either include that car parking space or not include that parking space. It was only shown in the latest version to address council's concerns. Perceived building bulk is one of the largest ones that council talks about there, and particularly in terms of for the neighbour next door, Ben Barber. So looking at it, there is some extension into the rear of this property. Again, given how small the property is, it's been difficult to expand. Needing to expand outwards has been a bit of a reason for that. But there's still no predefined rear setback when you look along Bedford Lane there. There are four doors up. There's a fairly large example that extends quite close to the laneway. So some of the additional building, perceived building bulk is attributable to a balcony, enclosed balconies that are shown on the plans. The reason for that was to provide greater privacy. So by enclosing those areas, it actually gives better privacy to next door. We do have the option if council or the owner or the adjoining neighbour were happy to remove those balconies. It would just mean there would need to be a fixed screen back on the window. So you're trading off one sort of for the other.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got one more point, if that's okay.
Yes, finish off, please.
Thank you. Internal and external amenity was the other main concern that council raised. So externally, firstly, we've prepared some shadow diagrams which showed that overshadowing wasn't an issue. The council report does seem to query the shadow diagram, but they don't seem to confirm what their concern with it is. They haven't elaborated on that. Overlooking has also been resolved, as I said, with fixed privacy screens. Internally, the design, again, has been rationalised to make it more usable for the owners. The council report recommends a 3-metre wide light well, but it's actually not clear. It's unclear why council have requested that. We're happy to investigate that or include that. We just don't know the rationale behind that. So that's probably more for me, but I'm happy to answer any questions of the panel or to adjoining neighbour.
Before I ask the panel if they've got any questions, could you just repeat your name again?
Yes, Matt Johnson.
Matt Johnson. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Does the panel have any questions of Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Chair. I just have one. It's in respect of the clause 4.6 and what you put down the variation there as. It should be a matter of fact in terms of discussion with council as to what's included and what's not included in the FSR calculation. So to answer my first question, what exceedance did you assess in terms of the 4.6 in doing that written request?
So, the written request was based on the 12.9% variation. It was originally slightly larger than that, but we did reduce the size of it down a little bit. We had actually sought some clarification previously with council regarding how they determined their level of FSR calculation, which there's an email there from Mr. Reed, which provides an extract of the GFA definition in the back of the Marrickville LEP, but it's unclear because he appears to have still highlighted the fact that GFA excludes balconies, vertical circulation spaces, but then still determines the FSR as being much higher than what we've calculated it as.
I can certainly confirm that council did not include balconies in terms of their GFA calculations. In terms of vertical circulation, you'll note that in that definition that I sent you, it refers to common circulation. So that applies when you're looking at multi-dwelling housing and RFBs and things like that, not to houses themselves. So it appears that you've excluded stairs and hallways for each level of the building.
Okay. Thanks, Jay.
Well, just one thing, just that I want to know what the clause 4.6, is it in respect of the original plans or the amended plans?
It would be in respect to the original plans. So originally the variation was about 13.5% and we've reduced that down to 12.9%. So it wasn't substantial in terms of the variations between the different clause 4.6 requests.
Mr. Johnson, for future reference, you should know that the 4.6 has to be current or at least relate to the current proposal to enable a planning authority or a planning body who might be approving an application to approve it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions of the architect? If not, can I move on to, well, we will be deliberating over that matter later and the determination will be placed on the council's website. So thank you for your submissions.
Thank you very much. Thanks,
Matilda. Item 8 is the fun item of the day. We always have a fun item. And we have 4 objectors on this matter. Can I say by way of background that this matter is recommended for refusal? Can I say that it's coming before the panel as a request for reconsideration? And it's been through reconsideration of previous determinations that have got it to this point in time. I should rephrase that. It's been through a planning proposal and it's got us to where we are right at the moment. I have 3 objectors listed to speak and I'm wondering if those 3 objectors wish to speak and if they're with us today. The first one I have listed is Tanya Taylor.
Yes, hello, it's Tanya Taylor. Thank you very much.
Tanya, would you like to address the panel?
Yes, thank you very much for allowing us to speak. I'm a current permanent resident in Chester Street West. Been a resident with my family here for 15 and a half years, and our front bedroom is 35 metres from the proposed 5-storey building fabric. In principle, we're not opposed to a change of land use to residential. However, the interpretation of the scale, density, character and community impacts are a great concern within the current proposal. We are opposed to the development due to a number of key reasons. 3 of these are privacy. The new 5-storey development proposed will allow views into all surrounding low-scale residential properties, removing residents' rights to living privacy. And no point does the development illustrate the proximity of the 5-storey structure to residential neighbours or illustrate the sight lines it'll allow directly into neighbouring habitable areas and private open space. Secondly, acoustics. The proposal's acoustic report does not consider the existing site and surrounding contextual topography, which is an amphitheatre. The student accommodation and recreation areas that are associated are actually located at the centre of the amphitheatre, which will no doubt cause an amplification of noise and expedite the current experience that the residents have with noise intrusion. Importantly, any development condition or proposed curfews will not preclude noisy revelers from the development's occupants from using the park as their late night entertainment precinct. There is no applicable mechanism provided that will prevent this occurrence. We note that the council's department parks cannot attend to the issues at 2 a.m. in the morning, and calling the police on a number of occasions, as we do presently, with a much lower local density is not a tenable solution. So when used, this will make the community existence at night times untenable for a peaceful residential area and compromising our quality of life. The last point was traffic. The immediate Annandale precinct has significant parking and traffic issues with not only residents, but also traffic around the recently extended park amenities. With residents competing daily for car parking on our street, as we do not have off-street parking. The parking allowance for the development is one car share per 60 student residents. We anticipate this is unrealistic and there will be a higher level of car ownership and extreme pressure put on the street parking demand and also increased traffic to the area, which is used by dozens of young children and parents every day. It's simply a recipe for disaster in regard to congestion and safety. In conclusion, it appears that no real consideration has been given to the neighbouring properties by the development, with consideration only given to the development occupants and property developer, absolutely disregarding the right of existing residents to continue leading a private and peaceful life when they're in their own properties. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler. Does anyone have any questions of Ms. Tyler? No? I have a Sue Strudwick. Are you with us today, Ms. Strudwick?
I am here. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Would you like to address us, please?
I would. My name is Sue Strudwick. I'm a resident of 2B Chester Street West. I live opposite Tanya Taylor, who's just addressed us. I'm against the development. My residence is actually the closest residence to the proposed building. It will be the equivalent of having a 4 or 5 storey building, given the elevation of my particular house. And it is so that I've been living here very peacefully and very, very happily for 23 years. So I would love to continue here. However, this development makes that very difficult. I don't want to belabor the point because I have addressed the planning committee before when they first contacted us about this development, but I just want to make 3 main objections. First of all, the unsuitability for that particular site. Second, the detrimental effect on the traffic. And third, the unsuitability in the local area of this particular development. I think these issues are best seen and not heard about. So I'm hoping that you've done a proper site visit. Now, I don't know whether you have or not, but a site visit means going to the Douglas Grant Park, which is next door to me. And I know it's difficult with COVID and the exceptional amount of rain, but getting out of your car and going to the lowest level of the park, if you'll do that, you'll see that the building's actually going to be 6 or 7 stories in relation to that lowest level of the park, given the elevation change between the park's lowest point and the building site itself. There's also the consideration that that's that many levels of stories of building overseeing what is a young children's park. So it's aimed at toddlers to sort of young, medium infants or tweens, I would say. So it's actually about 6 stories towering over that children's car park, the children's playground rather. The other thing I think that is worth pointing out is if you haven't done it, is please drive to the site. There is one access road only that is a dead end, and you have to stop your car to let a car come from the other direction. It is so small. There is cars parked there in every space at all times of the day, the night, the middle of the week, and the weekend. I know I drive it regularly because I want to have a look at the effect that these extra residents, and there are a lot of residents in this build proposed for this building, will have on that. I do take the point that if they're university students, many won't have cars, but I do stress the word many. There still will be cars that will be parking in our street where residents don't have off-street parking and will be affecting the my neighbours and even myself and my visitors. And finally, I want to point out that we're being asked to comment on a building that is 5 stories where the nearest neighbour is barely 2 stories. Our residences all have a single story with a smallish attic upstairs. So we have 2 levels and we're asking to comment on a building that's 5 levels plus a basement and actually sits higher than many of our properties. So it is just an eyesore. It's the equivalent of putting the Barangaroo Tower in the middle of the area that the Barangaroo Tower is. It'll be that far out of place when you have a look at the local area. So I thank you. Thank you. I thank you very much for allowing me to talk to you, and I hope that the decision to say no to this development will actually be the final outcome. Thank you very much.
For your information, might I say that we previously used to attend all these site inspections in a council bus or a panel bus. Now panelists inspect the site individually, but the sites are inspected.
So yeah, thank you very much for letting me know that. I do know with COVID and with the exceptional amount of rain lately that there's been a lot of difficulty doing those site visits, so I appreciate the efforts of the...
Yeah, so the potential to get out of the car has sometimes been limited as well. So thank you.
Interesting, because I drove down the end of my street, which is Chester Street, and went, oh, well, that's not too bad. But then when you walk down the Douglas Grant Park, which is actually three levels, and you go down to the lowest level, you do notice, hey, there's quite an elevation change here, and that does affect the consideration, I think.
Thank you. The next person I've got is a Mr. Warren Duncan, and I've got your address as 5 Chester Street. Is that correct? Do I have a Mr. Duncan with us? No? And he's listed as an objector.
Oh, you should be over here.
Sorry, Mr. Duncan, you are there?
Yes, I'm here.
Are you an objector?
Yes, I'm an objector.
So would you like to address this, please?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
I'm hoping not to sound too repetitive because I have some similar observations to my neighbours.
You can simply say you agree with those observations?
No. I'd like to reiterate. Yes, and round out.
And round. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and your panel. The Chester Street, Taylor Street local neighbourhood displays all the heritage qualities that are so highly praised in the Council's own general heritage policies for Annandale. The development of the parkland which unites these two streets in recent years has further consolidated the community nature of this little corner of the suburb. The park is used every day, as my neighbour said, by mothers and small children, by older children after school and in the early evenings, and at weekends for social gatherings by local families for barbecues and outdoor meals. Usage has only doubled since COVID, as more and more families in the vicinity discover this valuable retreat. This is a discrete corner of the inner west which can never be created again and would be severely damaged by a housing development overlooking the park and the meeting point of the two streets. At the moment, Johnson's Creek provides an excellent natural barrier between this little piece of domestic tranquility and the busy commercial activity on the other side. The proposed multi-story building with its high-density living right on the creek bank, overlooking our houses and the park, would shatter that tranquility and that balance and destroy the heritage value of this area, which was established 127 years ago and preserved until today. In other words, it would be sad if the heritage policies so eloquently proclaimed by council were blatantly ignored by supporting this proposed development of 15 Chester Street, Annandale, stroke Camperdown. This is not about some people wanting to set up or operate a business on our doorstep. The council's report on this application said, this proposal is consistent with the desired future character of the area. Whose desires are they, we ask? It also talked about a heritage buffer zone provided by the creek. Is our heritage only protected by a few metres of distance across the creek? In reference to our concerns about noise that would be created by a whole building full of young music lovers living permanently here and being active late into the night and the weekends, as students anywhere would do, it referred to the current noise created by the car repair works. Currently, more noise is created by the basketball practice court and their accompanying ghetto blast and music than by the car business. Car repairing happens only 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. The rest of the time, it's silent. Almost any other kind of business would suit the area better than the one which is going to bring a significant number of young people to live on our doorstep. In other words, Mr. Chair, this kind of development would dramatically and permanently change the character of this area. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions of any of those submitted by the panel? If not, we've got three speaking for the applicant. And might I assume, Mr. Sonser, that you're the orchestra leader?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, or fortunately, probably, I'm not the orchestra leader. I might let Miss Azzopardi, who has been involved in the application since it was promulgated at planning proposal stage, speak initially, and then if the panel will indulge me, I'll take off from there.
Thank you. Miss Azzopardi, would you address the panel, please? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, everyone, for attending today. I suppose I'll just start off by briefly confirming that the existing proposal is consistent with the bulk scale use and general design that was approved as part of the planning proposal stage. So just reiterating that the current design is not inconsistent with that, with the exception of the vehicle entrance ramp. So just moving on from that, wary of time, I'll just go through a few of the major issues that Council have raised in their recommendation report. The first being the calculation of the FSR. We're a little bit uncertain where the exact areas are that Council are concerned with. We believe we've calculated the FSR in accordance with some legal precedents that Mr. Sonter has also prepared. So we would be looking for further information with regards to the FSR areas of contention. Moving on to the ramp request from Council, the planning proposal initially did have ramped entry access, vehicular ramped entry access from Chester Street. The LEP was then subsequently, there was a GFA calculation for the commercial GFA that was introduced into the LEP, and that was the exact GFA that was calculated on the planning proposal, which did leave minimal room for design development movement. And unfortunately, during design development, planned rooms, substation rooms and the like have been introduced, which has actually reduced our ability to meet that GFA requirement, which is why we have since introduced a vehicular car lift. Now, albeit that does may contradict with what the DCP suggests with, if it's not viable, unless it's not viable, mechanical car lifting devices should not be used. We believe that there is no other viable solution in terms of a good planning outcome. And certainly we wouldn't be looking to lodge a 4.6 to vary the LEP clause for minimum GFA commercial requirements. We believe that the DCP should be applied with a level of flexibility to allow car lift access, albeit the car spaces down there are minimal. I think there's only 7 or 8 car spaces down there for the commercial use. That's all I suppose we have to say on the lift when we're talking about DCP versus LEP. In terms of concurrence with the State Department, we have entered into VPA discussions. That is currently being drafted by their legal team, and we expect that to be finalised within a 2 to 3 month period. As a result of that, we would be requesting the panel to defer determination for 3 months, just to allow that concurrence to be obtained. Regarding parking, the proposal is not inconsistent with the parking ratios or requirements in the DCP. There is precedence all throughout New South Wales to suggest that student accommodation does not require any car parking spaces, being so close to a lot of amenity, bus stops and the like. We don't feel like it would generate a further parking burden to the area. Definitely considering that the existing use is an automotive repairs shop, that definitely generates a lot more traffic generation than what we would anticipate.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yeah. 3 minutes?
I just Thanks, only have Ms. one more point to make, if that's okay.
Please make that point.
Sure. Just with regard to the encroachment on the through site link, we just wanted to note that the through site link design has actually been approved by Council. And that also encroachment into the through site link has also been accepted if it is in relation to vehicular access. So we feel like although there are maybe a few other minor issues raised in the recommendation, I feel like these could easily be addressed via conditions of consent.
As a party, I certainly have some questions of you, and the panel probably does as well. But I'm thinking before we pose those questions, we might hear from your other two speakers. So who might I hear from now?
With your indulgence, Mr. Chair and panel members, Matt Sonter. I'm a partner at Mills Oakley in the planning and environment team.
Thanks, Mr. Sonter.
I'm just here to speak to you about a couple of confined issues this afternoon. The first is the nomination of GFA. As part of the development application, you should have an advice penned by myself in relation to the GFA. There's been a string of decisions that deal with inclusion and exclusion of breezeways, which is the only matter between the council and the applicant in respect of GFA. The recent decision of your colleague, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Horton in EMAG Properties confirmed the decision of Commissioner O'Neill in HPG and Mossman Council in terms of the exclusion of the breezeways. I say the applicant's taken a very conservative approach and actually included areas that those two decisions would have otherwise excluded. No clause 4.6 is required for GFA, and the proposal as it is currently framed complies with the gross floor area that is ascribed to this site. That's the first point. The second point is just to reiterate that what you see before you today at the panel meeting is a culmination of cooperation as between my client and the council and the New South Wales Department of Planning in relation to the planning proposal that's been approved. You have before you today a development application that reflects to a T the design that was approved for the purpose of the planning proposal in terms of bulk, scale, height and use. If you read the assessment report by the council, the matters that it identifies on page 2, so page 364 of your pack, that are the main issues that have arisen from the application are vehicular access, egress, loading facilities and flood planning design, the upshot of which is threefold. One, they want an emergency management plan to be updated in relation to flooding and to incorporate updated levels from a Cardno model. Very, very simple to do. In terms of access and parking, the application, I think on everyone's version, complies specifically with the DCP requirements for parking. And as I'm sure you'd all be aware, section 4.15 capital 3A of the Act requires that once compliance with those specific standards is achieved, the council or consent authority may not lawfully request further and additional matters. The last matter is the question of whether or not a car lift may or may not be implemented. The provision within the DCP that deals with parking for this particular site is a site-specific DCP. That site-specific DCP does not contain an express preclusion for the provision of a car lift. The issue with the provision of a ramp as opposed to a car lift is that it reduces the available ground floor commercial space, which is a mandated requisite in the LEP that must be provided on this site. So in terms of access, if you were applying the DCP provisions, the applicant's position is resoundingly that the proposal complies with the DCP provisions. And if that is ever called into question, applying a flexible approach and looking to the objectives of the DCP, which are in terms of parking to ensure safe and efficient access to and from the site, to minimise car parking to encourage active transport, and to minimise the potential risks of flooding of the underground car park. The applicant says the panel could readily be satisfied that all three of those objectives are met by the proposal as it currently stands, incorporating a car lift within the site.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yeah, the only closing remark I have for you, panel, subject to any questions you might have, is that you have a development application before you that reflects the recent approval by way of a planning proposal of a change of use and change of controls on this site. The matters which have been identified in the council's assessment report are minor, readily capable of resolution through the imposition of condition, and are matters that are compliant with the objectives of the DCP. As Ms. Azzopardi flagged, an offer has been made to the Department of Planning for the purpose of having special infrastructure contributions by way of VPA, and that process will take 2 to 3 months to flow through. Those are all the submissions I propose to make, subject to any questions you have, Mr. Chair or panel.
So, Mr. Sonder, you agree with Ms. Azzopardi that the application is not capable of approval in its present form today?
Indeed, Mr. Chair, the Department of Planning hasn't provided its concurrence, and accordingly, there is no power for the panel to approve it today. The applicant would say, given that the matters between us are relatively minor and it's a mere administrative process to have the department execute the VPA and come back to the applicant, that the right decision from a panel perspective and to save ourselves all the time and cost of trumping off to court would be to defer the matter for a couple of months to allow that administrative process to play out and the approval from the Department of Planning to flow through for the purpose of concurrence.
There's also a VPA needing to be finalised with the council, is it not?
There is, for the dedication of a through site link, however, the offer has been made such that the imposition of a condition, so offer made on the terms proposed, the panel has the power to impose a condition of consent that requires that VPA to be formalised prior to a relevant trigger point within the DA, pre-CC or pre-OC.
And your submission is that a 4.6 is not required because it complies with the FSR.
Indeed, it's my submission and it is in fact 100% correct.
Just one question. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you,
Chair. Just in terms of the offer of the site link, but at the same time, the LEP, the PP, does not allow subdivision. So I'm just wondering, from a legal point of view, how is that going to be executed?
Yes, sorry, my understanding. Oh, sorry, Matt, did you want to take that
you
one?
Sorry,
I have had a bit of background knowledge on the way through on this one. The through site link, I believe council wants to not be subdivided until the LEP is amended to allow subdivision. So I think my understanding is there was an error in the LEP which didn't allow for subdivision and dedication of the through site link, but it is their intention to have that amended to allow for subdivision.
Adele, that would be an impediment to the panel or anyone at this point until that LEP amendment's being made to granting consent to achieve the objectives of what council's seeking.
Panel member, I think it's dealt with in the report at page 365, fourth paragraph from the bottom. And on the council's opinion in the last sentence within that paragraph, it says, in which case, should the application be approved, the through site link could be accommodated via an easement. So I think council's position is that the through site link can readily be accommodated by way of an easement. And within any VPA, there could be a provision which contemplated, should the LEP change to a permit subdivision, that such an application be made to formalise the easement arrangement through the formal dedication of the land to the council.
I'm wondering if I might hear from Mr. Reid. Jay, could you give us your comment on that interpretation?
Yeah, I mean, it could be done by an easement. You could do that. I don't think it would fulfil the requirements of the LEP. And should the LEP be changed in the future, it would not be possible to grant a consent that relied on a future change in controls.
No.
I don't think that would be possible, or practical, or realistic.
Thank you. Just to clarify that, the grant of consent would not be predicated or defined by an amendment to the LEP. Council's own report at page 365 identifies that the VPA, if a condition was imposed in accordance with it, with the offer that required it to be done by way of, could be achieved. Such a VPA document that incorporated a provision that subsequent subdivision, should that become permissible by the LEP be pursued, is not predicated on a change to the LEP. It's the imposition of a condition requiring an easement. And then if at such time in the future, the delivery of that VPA could be done as a Torrens title subdivision, that would occur, simple contractual obligation within the realms of a VPA.
Yep. The council's goal is certainly in terms of dedication, not in terms of easement. But obviously that would take some time to do. Also, okay. The current VPA at the moment does not align.
So can I just, I understand that proposition, but from a practical perspective, if it is council's goal that they would like the area dedicated as a Torrens title dedication, my client has always been willing to do that. if there is a threshold issue that council needs to address within the LEP, I suppose that would be incumbent on the council to seek to do that rather than the applicant at a panel meeting such as this. So my client is open and willing and has always been open and willing to dedicate that area of the site. The proposition that it's not able to be done doesn't rest, I suppose, on my client's shoulders through any fault of their own. It's rather an administrative check within the LEP that provides this prohibition on subdivision on the site at the moment. And that's not said critically. That's just, it's we're not standing in the way of that. We would actually, in fact, like to give council that land. That's what we proposed as part of the planning proposal. It's just that it doesn't seem to be available at the moment from council's end.
Did the applicant seek a change to the LEP as such?
Has the applicant lodged a planning proposal to permit subdivision?
Yes, because why I ask that is it was the PP was done on the basis of a request by the applicant.
It was.
So if there's been an error, then I was just wondering whether the applicant has in fact moved to correct that.
Sure. I might defer to Ms. Azadbadi.
Yeah, I believe we thought that it would be addressed by way of easement as per the council's recommendation report. We didn't believe that it was going to prohibit an approval for the development application. My understanding was, as per the recommendation report, an easement would be sufficient.
Thanks. Any other questions, Lisa, Alan? No? I've got two more, if I may. Can you perhaps inform the panel how effectively the car lift might work, given that it needs to go through what appears to be a loading area to get access to the car lift? I note there's a waiting bay as well, but if there's something being unloaded in the process, and I note there's a number of bikes in the basement, which is clearly encouraged, and I think 9 car parking spaces, some of those commercial. Is there a system, a management system on how that loading bay might work? Has that been addressed?
Yes, it has. So I'm happy to share my screen if that's required. Otherwise, I can just refer to the particular plan level.
I've got the plan level in front of me, but sure. Others might benefit from this, you sharing the screen.
Sure, no worries. I'm happy to do so. Just bear with me a second.
DA202B, I think you're after.
Correct. Okay, just bear with me 1 second. Sorry. All right. Can you all see my screen there?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, I've just lost my mouse here. Sorry.
Maybe I should take my wave off the screen.
Sorry, everyone. I just can't seem to find my mouse. There we go. Oh, there we go. So as you can see, this is the Chester Street entry. So we're on ground level. The car would turn off Chester Street, left into the waiting area. There is a waiting bay on the left, but there would be a vehicle management traffic system, which would be a traffic light system visible from Chester Street to identify if the waiting bay is in use. If the waiting bay was in use, then vehicles would need to exit from the car lift or from the waiting bay into the car lift to allow that person to enter into the waiting bay. The car would then go into
the car lift. They'd wait on Chester Street, would they, as a party?
They would, yes. Unfortunately, given the nature of the site, there's not too many spaces. However, there would be no parking, a no parking allowance to the left-hand side of Chester Street to allow for council's waste truck, which was agreed by council. So there would be enough space, I suppose, for cars to traverse effectively. The driveway space is also another opportunity for cars to pull into, allowing another car to to exit past it in the driveway position. So once a car enters the car lift and goes down into the basement level, you can see, So that's lower ground, and then it traverses all the way to the basement level. It would then exit the car lift, have a tight swept path into any of the available car spaces. And I suppose that's the general configuration of the car lift arrangement. I've also spoken with multiple car lift manufacturers just to get some more information around how that car lift is maintained, and also in the event of an operational issue, how that's dealt with. There are multiple car lift manufacturers that have a twofold system, one being a hotline 24 hours, which does some troubleshooting immediately onto the electrical system and would identify any faults that way, and while also simultaneously calling out a technician to site immediately, which we've been told takes 30 to 45 minutes at worst case for someone to arrive and assist anyone in the basement to exit the car lift. That being said, technology's come a long way. We've installed a few of these and we haven't had any issues to date with them. Notwithstanding, that might not be the case for all car lifts, but certainly the lift we would be proposing would be one of high quality with great maintenance. I mean, this building is a build to hold asset, so the client is certainly not willing to put something in that isn't going to last its life. So I think you know, the general operation has been used in multiple LGAs successfully, and I don't foresee it being an issue in this location either.
Mr. Azapati, are you a planner or traffic engineer?
I work for the client as their development manager.
You're the development manager. I'm just interested in the position of the loading bay in the basement. It just seems a fairly inaccessible space to be to have a loading bay. Just
we are willing to change that location to any available car space. Also on the we're certainly willing to change that to any of the available car spaces in the basement.
I was just going to say my last question relates to your calculations for studios. Are they generally in accordance with boarding house type of calculations and exclude sort of bathrooms, etc.?
Correct, yes. And it's consistent with the planning proposal. I can attest to the many, many meetings we had with strategic planning at Inner West to talk about the configuration and size of those rooms, and they are consistent with what was also in the planning proposal.
I've never lived in student accommodation, but 18 to 20 square metres seems crazy.
I have to say there are probably 3,000 or 4,000 of them in a very close vicinity to this particular site.
Right. Okay.
Sorry, excuse me, it's Anna Johnston. I'm the planner working on the project. It's just worth noting with the room sizes.
Sorry, Ms. Johnston, I didn't mean to pass you by. Do you want to say a few words?
I just wanted to say that with the rooms, the student housing rooms, the floor space area requirements for those are set out in the site specific. So it's not under the affordable rental housing step. And I guess the architectural drawings include some detailed drawings that show how the proposed development complies with those requirements.
Okay, thank you. Panel, any other questions?
No, issues? I don't believe so. I mean, I presume the applicant's team understand that there are a number of hurdles, whether they be legal ones or other, and unloading and the car park arrangement and whatnot. This particular matter, I think the Chair noted this earlier, was called up to be determined by a panel because of its time in the system. So I just want you to be aware of that as well. If in the event, I'm not speaking for anyone, not even myself, but you would be aware, Mr. Sonta, in the event that the panel refused it because there are some issues to sort out apart from the legal impediments. There is also, there is always the option of an 8.2 review under the Act.
Indeed. All right. Any, if there's no other comments, last chance, Mr. Saunter, Ms. Azzopardi, Ms. Johnson, any other comments you'd like to make?
I think I've said my piece. In terms of permissibility, I think the balance of the issues that remain are more administrative nature, readily able to be overcome and accepted by the council as matters to be, that can be overcome. In terms of matters of merit, I think the proposal sits pretty squarely within the box that was approved at the planning proposal level, and any residual matters could be readily conditioned. Matters such as you discussed about loading and the location of the loading bay, you'd hate to see the culmination of such time and effort be knocked off on the back of a, you know, the location of a loading bay zone within a basement car park. But if it is to be that way, it's makes low-hanging fruit for a Section 34 conference.
Well, there's always an 8.2 beforehand, which is very productive. And if I can say that I haven't gone back to the actual development application in terms of how the development was described, but on 364, I do note that it speaks about stratum subdivision, and I presume the DA is described that way as well. So the DA officially, you being the lawyer, I'm not the lawyer, but the DA would have to be amended to be described such that it would delete that.
I understood.
You can take
it. Panel member, I think you've probably got more legal experience than I have. Truth be told, having sat in the court for quite a significant period of time, in terms of stratum subdivision, the prohibition on subdivision only applies, as I understand it in the LEP, to a Torrens subdivision, not a subdivision under the Strata Schemes Development Act, which is what the stratum would be. But I understand the issue.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you all. This matter will be determined by the panel shortly with all other matters. The results will be posted on the website. I thank you for your very helpful presentations today, and we'll take all of those comments on board. Thank you. Can the panel just stay here for